Hello, this is Tom Bittinger, bassoonist with the Fort Collins Symphony.
And I'm cellist Beth Wells. Welcome to the Fort Collins Symphony podcast. Today we are talking about the music we will be playing on Masterworks 3.
The concert is titled Gold Standard and features an amazing clarinetist, Boris Alekverdian. Our concert opens with four C interludes from the opera Peter Grimes by Benjamin Britten.
Britten was a 20th century British composer, conductor, and pianist. He was born in the English seacoast town of Lowestoft in 1913 on November 22nd. I mention his birth date because it is the same month and day as the patron saint of music, Saint Cecilia, who was born in Rome in the year 200. Britten is best known for substantial opera works, song cycles, and large orchestral works, but his list of compositions is extensive and for many genres. Some titles our listeners may know from Britten's orchestral works are The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra.
Oh, we just performed that with the Youth Education Series.
Oh, that's right. What a great piece. The Simple Symphony, of course, the four C interludes from Peter Grimes, and perhaps his most famous choral and orchestral piece is The War Requiem, which was written in response to World War I and World War II. By the way, Britten was a pacifist, and this is one of the many reasons he left England at the beginning of World War II and landed in New York City, living there between 1939 and 1942. His most famous opera, Peter Grimes, was inspired by a work by the poet George Crabbe entitled The Burrow, which Britten was reading in 1942 while in the United States. The story is set on the Suffolk coast, which is close to Britten's home, and it awakened in him such a longing for England that he decided to return. During the long sea transatlantic crossing in April of 1942, Britten completed a couple of choral works that may be recognizable to our listeners, The Ceremony of Carols and Hymn to St. Cecilia. What a gift for a composer to excel in writing such significant choral and instrumental works. So let me zero in on the opera Peter Grimes. After the long trip from the U.S., Britten worked on Peter Grimes at his country home in Snape, Suffolk. The opera opened in June 1945 to rave reviews. Ticket sales matched or exceeded those for La Boheme and Madame Butterfly, which were both being performed at the same time. The opera administrator called it the first genuinely successful British opera, apart from Gilbert and Sullivan, since Purcell. And many regard Britten as the first top-ranked composer that Great Britain produced since Henry Purcell 250 years earlier. So, back to the Britten piece we are playing on Masterworks 3, four sea interludes. That's sea interludes as in sea, the ocean, not sea as in C major, right?
Right. Sea as in the ocean. And the ocean plays a major role in this opera. Peter Grimes is set in a small coastal town in England.
As a matter of fact, Britten modeled the village in Peter Grimes after his own hometown near the Suffolk coast. He had a great love for the North Sea as well.
The opera is a tragic story about a fisherman named Peter Grimes, who's somewhat of a loner and outcast in his village, a situation which is made worse by the tragic accidental death of one of his young apprentices. When the opera begins, he's been summoned to court after the boy's death. He's let off with a warning, though, but told not to take on another apprentice. The townspeople, though, are convinced that he's guilty of some wrongdoing. Grimes disregards the court warning and soon takes on another young helper. Tragically, this new apprentice has an accident and falls off a cliff to his death. Both the boys' deaths, which were indeed accidental, combined with being ostracized by the community, drive Peter Grimes to the brink of insanity. Now the townspeople have become a mob, hunting him down. An old sea captain encourages Grimes to take his boat out to sea and just sink it, go down with the ship. The next day dawns in the village, and there's a report that a ship is sunk off the coast. The townspeople go about their business as if nothing has happened. And that's the end of the opera.
The four C interludes we are playing are four of six instrumental interludes that occur between scenes of the opera. In them, Benjamin Britten really captures the atmosphere of this small town by the sea, as well as the turmoil in the characters' minds.
The first interlude, titled Dawn, occurs in the opera between the prologue, where Peter Grimes is warned by the court, and Act One. Britten shows through his music the early sun poking through the clouds and people starting their day. There is, however, an ominous sound of pending tragedy. Second interlude, Sunday Morning, occurs at the beginning of Act Two. We hear church bells ringing as the community gathers for worship. The third, Moonlight, is the prologue to the final act, which happens after the death of Grimes' second apprentice. Listen to how Britten depicts the ebb and flow of the waves in semi-darkness and the intense feelings of remorse that Peter Grimes is feeling. The last of the four sea interludes is Storm, and wow, what a storm it is. In the opera, this is an interlude from the first act, but for this concert version of the four sea interludes, it serves as the finale.
Earlier, our guest soloist for Masterworks 3 is a virtuoso clarinetist?
Yes, Boris Alekverdian. Mr. Alekverdian grew up in Russia, where at the age of 9, he started learning to play the clarinet from his father, who is also a clarinetist. He then studied at the Moscow Conservatory, and when he was 19, he came to the United States to study at the Oberlin Conservatory in Ohio. His professional orchestra positions have included associate principal in the Kansas City Symphony, principal clarinet with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and since 2016, he's been principal clarinetist with the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Boris will be playing two pieces with us on the concert. The first, Verdiana, is by Alexei Shor. Alexei Shor is unique among composers because he is self-taught. His formal training was in mathematics, not music. He has a PhD in math. He just wrote music for fun, but when a musician friend of his noticed one of his pieces and wanted to perform it, he began to focus his life on being a composer. Now his compositions are performed by the best orchestras and opera companies around the world.
The composer said this about his piece, Verdiana. I got the request to write something related to Verdi for a tour of Latin America. I thought it would be entertaining to take famous melodies by Verdi and present them in South American styles. It's in three movements. The first one is samba, the second is bossa nova, and the third, the most virtuosic one, is a tango. Here's a sample of each movement. The samba. The bossa nova. Tango. The second piece we are performing with our clarinet soloist is Shalom Aleichem, Rav Fiedman by Béla Kovács. The Hungarian Béla Kovács, besides being a composer, is also a virtuoso clarinetist. He was clarinetist with the Hungarian State Opera Orchestra for 25 years and has been a professor at the Franz Liszt Music Academy since 1975. He wrote Shalom Aleichem, Rav Fiedman, which means, "Peace be with you, Rabbi Fiedman," as a tribute to Giora Fiedman, who's a legendary klezmer clarinetist.
What kind of clarinetist?
Klezmer. Klezmer is a style of instrumental Jewish folk music. You might hear it at a Jewish wedding or other celebration.
Oh, I think I remember hearing a klezmer-style clarinet solo in the wedding scene of Fiddler on the Roof.
That's right.
I think I'll go back and listen to that before the concert.
So, Shalom Aleichem, Rav Fiedman is a piece played by a clarinetist, written by a clarinetist, for a clarinetist. The piece opens with a slow introductory flourish in the clarinet's low range. Later, it grows into a lively Eastern European sounding dance. I think our audience and musicians will really enjoy hearing Boris play both of these unique musical styles.
Our last piece on this Masterworks 3 concert is Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 in C minor. Probably the most well-known opening notes in all of classical music. Even if you never listened to orchestra concerts, you've probably heard this.
This is a piece that, for me, never gets old, no matter how many times I hear or play it. How many times do you think we've played this piece, Beth?
Oh, gosh, 10 or 12 times? Now, you're a bit older than me, so you're more experienced with this piece.
Oh, yes, I'm so old. I remember playing it when Beethoven himself was conducting. Well, seriously, each time we play it, it's still challenging and exciting. Now, that's a mark of great music, isn't it? Or any art form, for that matter, is that it can be experienced again and again. And each time you learn something new.
When Beethoven's Fifth Symphony was first performed, it was in December of 1808 in Vienna. And what a marathon concert. The weather was freezing cold and the auditorium unheated. Unheated. Oh, I can't believe it. String
that
players.
That would never happen today.
That would never go over. The musicians reportedly struggled in these less than ideal conditions to rehearse and learn the new difficult music.
The concert was indeed a marathon, but not only for the musicians, also for the audience. Besides playing the Fifth Symphony, the concert included Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, his Choral Fantasy, the Fourth Piano Concerto, a concert aria, and excerpts from his Mass in C.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe they played all those pieces, and those are big pieces.
They are. It was over 4 hours long, and apparently it did not really go very well. They even had to stop and restart in the middle of the Choral Fantasy. But people remembered the Fifth Symphony, and it was soon recognized as a masterpiece. Now, back to that famous opening. From these first four notes, Beethoven builds the entire symphony. He referred to these opening notes as fate knocking at the door. Indeed, you will hear this fate theme almost constantly in the first movement. Beethoven was a master at building long phrases out of small ideas. In this first movement, he will continually build and build excitement, then interrupt it, like here, where the horns interrupt to announce the second theme, which is a lyrical melody played in the violins. Yet, underneath, you can still hear the opening rhythm in the low strings. One of my favorite surprise interruptions in this movement is when the orchestra cuts off and the oboe is left holding a note, like they missed the cutoff, which then becomes a little cadenza.
Just when you think you're hearing the final chords of the movement, Beethoven takes us into the coda section to squeeze even more music out of this four-note theme. For most composers, the coda is a short ending section, but Beethoven makes this coda as long as any other section of the movement.
Then, when you hear what sounds like yet another repeat to the very beginning, he ends the movement with strong C minor chords.
The second movement is a peaceful break from the storm of the first movement. It opens with the cellos and violas playing this melody.
The movement is then a series of variations on that melody. Between the variations, Beethoven interrupts with fanfares of brass and timpani.
This movement is a standard for cellists auditioning for a professional orchestra position, and maybe violas too. It demonstrates your easiness in playing elegantly in the key of A flat major. Here is one variation that is especially challenging for the cello section.
The bassoon even gets its own little variation. After this peaceful second movement, the drama returns with a third movement. It opens mysteriously. Then, The horns enter strongly with the theme. Notice the rhythm. It's the same fate theme of the first movement.
The middle section, called the trio, starts with this difficult lick in the cello and basses, followed by bassoons and violas. Beethoven then weaves this theme into a little fugue, or fughetta, as it's called.
There is no break between the third and fourth movements. Instead, just when you expect Beethoven to wrap up the third movement with final chords, it goes into this murky transition section. It's like wandering in the fog, and then the clouds part, and the sun comes out in glorious C major. With these opening chords of the finale, we hear for the first time in the symphony piccolo, trombones, and contrabassoon. They've been sitting quietly all through the first three movements, just waiting to make this entrance.
Not only is this their first entrance in this symphony, but it is the first time these particular instruments were used by a composer in any symphony. And to review those instruments again, piccolo, contrabassoon, and trombone.
Just when you think everything is happy and resolved, the triumphant C major march is interrupted by a short minor section, where we hear once again the opening fate theme rhythm. But the optimistic C major cannot be held back and returns again to take us on a wild ride to the end of the symphony.
What sounds like final chords interrupted by none other than the bassoons.
Yay, bassoons.
Introducing a slight variation of the march theme. The music then builds in excitement, getting faster until the final coda, marked presto, meaning very fast.
The coda starts here.
Beethoven then hammers home his C major triumph over fate with lots and lots of final chords. Thank you.
please join us for Masterworks 3 Gold Standard, Saturday, February 1st, 7:30 p.m. at the Lincoln Center. This is Tom Bittinger
and Beth Wells for the Fort Collins Symphony.